Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Conduit is your place for custom content needs. We channel content and connections. We create a community through the creative use of the publishing process. Visit www.conduit-inc.com. Guys, I wanted to do something fun here as we find ourselves in the middle of January, many of us freezing cold amidst a lot of snow. And 2018 is in the rearview mirror, and we are already well into 2019, hopefully bringing our New Year's resolutions to fruition, working hard, doing our best, being the buffalo, and utilizing the hope mindset. So I won't preach any more on that, but I hope we're all off to a roaring start nonetheless. What I wanted to do today was share a few excerpts of some of our best of, if you will, from 2019. It's been a real pleasure to interview a lot of different people, and we have been really fortunate to get some really cool interviews, whether they are entrepreneurs or authors, experts in their field. It's been a lot of fun. I've even mixed in a few soapbox efforts on my own, but I wanted to take some time and say, you know what, maybe I should do a little cut and paste and share some of the best of. We've had, you know, Matthew Parker and the soothing sounds of Matthew Parker, as I called it, in his English accent, talking about the value of print. And he's a huge print ambassador. We had Joanne Gore, another fabulous print ambassador and founder of Joanne Gore Communications. She's done so much with Explore in Canada and just had a great vibe about her. And I think you'll notice that with just about anybody we interview, that they've got a great vibe about them. Carla Johnson talking about the seventh era of marketing. She was fabulous. I don't know if you remember, but she was talking about why experiences matter and kind of the whole concept of being able to tell stories and connect with people. So I thought that was really, really cool. We had Connor Gillivan, young guy, serial entrepreneur. And I thought it was not just an insight on what happens in terms of how to get things done and have that entrepreneurial spirit, but here's also a young guy and giving us a little perspective on that. So it was really, really impressive. So I just thought it would be really fun for me to take a moment and share some of that with you guys. And can't thank them all enough for spending some time with us in 2019, and can't wait to share more of these people with you. So I think you'll get a kick out of it. I'm going to start, though, with an old friend, and not just to me, but to the industry, and have a little excerpt from my conversation with Danielle Dijon, who many of you know is not just a print ambassador, but a lover of print, and he has just done some great things for the industry. So, again, hope you guys are off to a roaring 2019. Give the Best Of podcast a little listen, and remember to be the buffalo. Enjoy. How do I develop real meaningful intimate relationships that are soul enriching?
You've hit on something that I think is absolutely fundamental. We are coming back around, and that coming back around is that we are not necessarily relying solely on technology. We have learned to integrate it into what we do. And the fact is that the companies that have gone back to using or gone back to integrating more of the humanity,
right,
in their campaigns are the ones that are listened to. I mean, one of the things I was thinking about this morning was I was reading an article, you know, in one of the newsletters, whatever, and a gentleman was saying the concept of the voice of the customer. And this is an old concept. I mean, Peppers and Rogers wrote a book called The Voice of the Customer, that you have to be talking to the customer to find out what it is they actually want and what it is that they do not want. And you can only do that by human interaction. I mean, algorithms and big data are wonderful, and we're learning how to use that as a basis for how we are going to act. But it cannot be the only source of information. We need to have those relationships with our customers. I mean, in one of the presentations that I do, my opening comment is always, I am amazed that at a time when we all owned multiple devices, that we have access to the knowledge of the world, that people will still come out to see somebody speak in person when they could just as easily be sitting at their desk and see it streaming.
Mm-hmm.
That human interaction becomes vital to communication and to correspondence.
Yeah.
The ability to know that you can talk to that person, they can listen to what you are saying to them, what are your concerns, and they can answer you in real time, has become so much more important. And that's when you're saying we're getting back to, that is, I think, what we're getting back to. It is, how do we find that graceful balance between technology and humanity? How do we, you know, understand that certain things take time and others you can expect a good, quick return on? I mean, printers, to your point, have a business to run. They need to have that cash flow today, this week, this month, this quarter. But at the same time, they also have to be thinking in a larger, longer term. What piece of equipment should I be buying that's going to take at least 12 to 18 months for it to really be making the kind of money that I need?
Mm-hmm.
You know, should I be investing in digital? Should I be investing in, you know, augmented reality, virtual reality, mixed reality? You know, should I be investing, you know, in more social media, et cetera? And I think that those are the kinds of questions that we should be asking. And implicit in that answer is going to be a mix between how do I use the technology that's available to me and the technology that will be available to me, and how do I integrate that into my day-to-day dealings with my customers over the phone or face-to-face?
Yeah, I agree. Take a listen to an excerpt of my conversation with my good friend, Connor Gillivan. Tell me about FreeUp.
Yeah, sure. So like I said, we were building this Amazon business, and we were hiring a good amount of people. And at a certain point, we got introduced to this idea of outsourcing,
right,
which we had never heard about before, from a fellow entrepreneur when we were living in Orlando. And we were like, oh, okay, this seems interesting. We could possibly save some money by hiring people that are, you know, outside of the U.S. or even people that are in the U.S. but not directly in our area. And so we started using websites like Upwork and what used to be Odesk and Elance and Freelancer and Fiverr.com.
Right.
And
right.
We would go onto these sites and we would post jobs and get 10 to 25 applications from freelancers. We would set up interviews with the ones we thought looked good. We'd interview them, and then we'd at the end try to choose the best one for our business. And we had a lot of successes. I mean, we hired some people that I still work with today, and it's really exciting to meet someone and then work with them for 5 years, but never actually meet them in person. But then we also had a lot of poor experiences where the quality of the person just didn't work out, or they're very poor at communicating. So it just led down bad paths. And so we were frustrated by this process and how much time we were spending on it. And that was the frustration that really led us to build FreeUp. And so FreeUp is all about making the online hiring experience a lot simpler. And the way we're a little bit different is that we receive applications from freelancers every week. Right now we receive around 1,000 applications from freelancers every week that want to join our marketplace so they can get hired by businesses. Mm-hmm. And we actually interview them. We vet them for their skills, their attitude, and their communication. And then we only allow the top 1% into our network. Oh, wow. So we're trying to take the top talent, the top tier people, and then they can offer their skills to the businesses that hire with us.
Okay. And so do they have the same frustrations with these other places? And that's why, you know, they're looking for something that's a little bit because it goes both ways, right? I mean, it's not just, hey, you know, on the hiring side, you know, you go to like you're getting 1,000 different people and you've got some spotty
right.
Quality here and there. It goes the other way from the hiring side, right?
Yeah, completely agree. So for freelancers, they also have frustrations with some of these marketplaces because there's just way too much competition. So it's very hard to even stand out as they're applying to different projects for businesses. So they may apply and maybe a very good candidate, but then there's 20 other people that are going to put a price lower than them and that are going to try to get the job as well. So
right.
when they come through our network, there's less competition. And it's a more direct line to potential clients that would be a good fit for them.
That's cool. So let me ask you, and I thank you for that. I think it's an amazing, chronology in obviously short time. I mean, some people that'd be an entire career. So, you should obviously be proud of that, but let me ask you a couple philosophical things and perspective things. Because are we in a free agent nation at this point? I mean, your business is built on this premise, you know, and, you know, what has changed over the course of time, this industrial age mindset. And again, this speaks, you know, specifically to our readership, for example. Look, they built their businesses in the industrial age. The recipes they use for engaging their clients are from the industrial age and, you know, everything is in-house. They've defined themselves by their assets.
Yep.
And, you know, we're in this day and age of remote workforces and free agent nation. And so there are challenges with that. Mm-hmm. But talk to that. And, I mean, do you believe, one, we're in this free agent nation? My guess is you do. But then, you know, what are some of the idiosyncrasies that come along with that that you think people need to take heed of?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. So I do think we're going through a pretty big transition, and not just in the United States, but worldwide as well, in terms of freelancing and the gig economy becoming a big part of how businesses will have to work with individuals and professionals. Mm-hmm. I think that there's still a lot of value to having full-time employees or even part-time employees within your business. You know, they just provide a different level of service and you have a different ability to connect with them and work with them in different ways than you do with a remote freelancer or a remote professional. But especially with the millennial generation really coming into the workforce, they just have a lot of different preferences in terms of how they want to run their career. They want more freedom. They want more control. They like the idea of running their own business, which pretty much what freelancing is. And they want that opportunity to get their own clients, to work with companies that they feel impassioned by and they feel connected to. And they want control over where they're headed in the future. So I think we're on our path there. It's not completely there, but it's a huge buzzword in the news right now. And I know a lot of people are starting to learn more about it. Whereas maybe 10 years ago, I think any business owner would default to want to hire an employee, whereas say maybe they have in the back of their mind, you know, what is a freelancer? Is that something that I could explore as well?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, it's interesting. You mentioned this, and I didn't know how much I wanted to stay away from it or talk about it because, in fact, I was just in your town. Like I said, I flew out of Denver last night, and I got to tell you, we were at this thing, and there's a lot of conversation about these generations, right? And I got to believe, I mean, aren't you, on some level, aren't you sick of it? Just the conversation, all millennials this and blah, blah, blah. And I feel like it's become a business unto itself almost. And, you know, I've got, my kids are obviously going to be Gen Z and, you know, I got a higher education magazine. We're doing an article on Gen Z right now. And, I don't know. I mean, like you're saying, you know, there's a lot of interest in running their own business and being a free agent or freelancer is kind of like that. And I don't think that that's necessarily generational. I think we put these people in these silos and it's like, look, that's just a trend in general, you know, that our world is getting back to this. And it's so funny how we have to define I'm kind of over it and I wondered if you know you get tired of that as well.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, and I agree with you. I think it is more just a movement, not necessarily directly correlated to any specific generation,
right?
But just with the evolution of digital and the ability to connect and meet with people and work with them from anywhere in the world, as long as you have internet, I think that evolution has really led to this movement more towards freelancing and being able to run your own business and work with companies remotely. I would say that's probably the biggest contributing factor, not necessarily the mindset of a specific generation.
How about this? So, because one of the things from my perspective in this world, there's a challenge, right? And I think, and I'm very hopeful for this. Now, look, we've got some, mm-hmm. we've had some scary stuff happen in the world. And, you know, my belief is that stuff combined with all the technology, almost further cocoons us and puts us at arm's length, or it allows us not to take the call or return the text or the email or whatever. But I still believe that we as people crave interaction, you know, like this is gold. I love this. This is important. And conversation is important. So we went through such a period where there was so much technology and it was so much like I can automate everything. And, you know, look, there's a portion of that's going to continue. But do you feel like people are still need that human connection on some level?
Yes, 100%. I see it in my business every single day. A big reason that a lot of clients say that they stick with us is because of that human element. My business partner and I, we're very hands-on. So as new clients sign up, we actually reach out to them personally and see if we can answer any questions for them or if there's any way that we could walk them through our software so they could better understand how they could use it to build their business. And then we have a team that's available at all hours of the day that can hop on the phone or hop on a quick chat with someone to answer any questions they have or help them in any way as possible. So I still think people crave that. And I think it makes a huge difference in terms of building relationships and doing business as well. I've always kind of learned and said that people, you know, eventually buy from people. They don't necessarily, you know, just buy a brand. They like to have that connection and be able to trust someone and really go after that rather than just, a piece of technology. So I agree with you there. I think it's a big factor.
Take a listen to an excerpt of my conversation with my good friend, Carla Johnson.
call this brand attachment disorder. It's this tendency that people have to look at companies who were successful in whatever industry, and then they start to make excuses about why they can be successful, but their own company can't. You know, we don't have that kind of culture. We don't sell that kind of thing. That's not what our executives would ever say yes to. There's a jillion different excuses for why you couldn't do the same. But all it does is make excuses and hold you back from being that kind of innovative company. And really what we need to do is start to look at how we can use those brands as inspiration and start to transplant what's behind some of the ideas that make them so successful, but put it in a context that works in whatever industry or size of company or whatever constraints we have in our own world.
Yeah. You know, you did this thing when we were out in Colorado together, and where we just observed. We started, remember that? So we did the whole, and it was just a matter of, so it's funny because I think it's almost like saying, look, you got to start thinking differently, and you just have to do it. You have to start. And what you're saying is you don't have to change everything. You don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, you just start making, try some things here. And part of that comes from observation and putting a different spin on it. And I assume that, you know, when you do work with clients, that's kind of what you're saying to them is, look, you can make these changes. It's not, you know, we're not talking about, I think that's the fear, right? I think that's this world that people think, oh, I got to change everything. And or it's just too hard. And yet you're saying, just stick your toe in the water a little bit, right?
That's absolutely it. And we forget about how small of a thing that we can do on a daily basis that gives us a different perspective. So I work with a lot of engineers, data analytics, you know, really numbers-driven people. Mm-hmm. And I say, if you want a different perspective of just how people interact in a meeting, just sit in a different chair than what you normally do in a weekly meeting. Because, you know, if you have those Monday morning meetings or, you know, Friday lunch meetings, everybody comes in, and whether it's, you know, they assume it's kind of like when you were in class in school, there's a seating chart and everybody has assigned seating. Mm-hmm. Okay, when you do that, that puts your mind in autopilot and you stop recognizing little nuances of how people interact, either, you know, little nuances in their vocal tones, it could be nonverbal behavior, it could be little, you know, quick facial expressions. But if you always come in and sit at the head of the table, instead sit in the middle on a side and just watch how the energy and the dynamics of everybody interacting changes. And those kind of little observations add up to big things over time because it makes you become more aware and more mindful of whatever situation you're in.
Take a listen to an excerpt of my conversation with my good friend, Joanne Gore. What do you think? You know, I'm really interested in the biggest thing I'm excited about today with you is to find out what your take is on B2B marketing and the engagement process and how it's changed over the course of time. Because as you said, you know, it really is all about who you do it for, right? And
yep,
so
absolutely,
that's changed, in my opinion, in this day and age. In the world, you know, it was always industrial age. Now we're in a different world, and it's not about just pushing products. It's about who we stand for, which has to have had changed the engagement process. And so in B2B marketing, if you will, that's had to have changed. Am I right?
Absolutely. And it's interesting you say that. There are a lot of factors. And again, we both agree at the core, it's the same thing. If you need to know who you are, what you do, who you do it for, and why it matters. Mm-hmm. How the story is told and the ways the story can be told is what has really shifted over the last three decades. It, you know, I thankfully can't go much before that, and
right.
or I really would be dating myself. but I'd say the last 10 years alone have taken a lot of people by surprise. And I hate to say it, is this whole, it's that millennial generation. And the reason I cringe when I say it is because I believe millennials have really, really gotten a bad rap lately. Mm-hmm. I think they're smart. They have a lot to offer. We just need to understand what matters to them. And we have to stop shoving down their throat the way we've been doing things all along. Because the reality is this generation in a year is going to be more than half of the workforce. And they're not the teenagers. They're not the 18-year-olds today that everyone, those are actually not even millennials, truthfully.
Right.
But the real millennials, the ones who have grown up bridged between, you know, living completely connected and having a little bit of that analog world, they're the ones making the decisions now. They're the B2B buyers. And they're perfectly straddled on both sides of the fence to know how to buy the way they want to buy, how to communicate with people who may not necessarily be as tech savvy as they are, but that means they also know how to take advantage.
Right.
So it's really important that we understand how they are searching for information and how to talk to them. And the reason I say, you know, they straddle the analog world is I think that they're one of the reasons that printed direct mail has made the comeback that it's starting to make, and we're really starting to see that impact in how it is complementing the overall buyer journey,
mm-hmm.
Which of course includes a lot of digital content. Content marketing has become huge when it comes to B2B marketing. You know, there's a few things that B2B marketers know really, really well, and that's how to make the most out of a lead. And that's, you know, through CRM, through wherever the data intelligence is, they know how to do it. They know where those conversion points are happening because of the data that's being mined on a regular basis. And that's what really has also shifted, in my mm-hmm. opinion, and you've probably seen it too. The access to data and the ability to measure campaigns, I can't even compare it to what it was 30 years. It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So when you factor in the ability to manage success and the ability to learn from failure, because, again, you have to fail to get better. You can't just get better by always winning. At least that's what I've found in my many years in the business.
Right.
So when you put all these factors together, this digital, always on information at your fingertips, expected by this generation that's entering the workforce, aligned with some of the older tactics that we know work, such as print, and how to properly incorporate them into that overall customer journey, and then how to manage and nurture that relationship from the time they raise their hand and shown some sort of interest, learning from them, engaging with the community, knowing where they hang out, or, you know, if they're on social media, be on social media. But if they're not, know where they are and talk to them. This is how B2B marketing works today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not just an ad and a direct mail and, you know, come to our website. That doesn't fly anymore.
Well, listen, I think the biggest change, I mean, everything you said there is like a modern day playbook, in my opinion.
Thank you.
No, I mean, it really is, because I think you, first and foremost, you've got to understand who these buyers are and how they've changed. And you're right, exactly. I you know, the millennials, regardless, I mean, I'm with you on that. We've gotten into it, and I've played, my part in that too. We've gotten into this world where we've branded them, and that doesn't make any sense. You know, part of that is
I have four millennials at home and a Gen Zer, so I have the full gamut at my disposal. I live it and breathe it every day.
So yeah,
and I hear the way they're spoken about. too.
Sure. And, you know, part of that is just that we've all taken on new attributes. I mean, when you brand something, a lot of times it's out of insecurity. Change happens and you know, the lack of understanding and the parochialism for ourselves, you know, what we want, you know, we start to project onto them. And so it has been different. It is changed. But it corresponds this technical change, the shift from industrial age to this, whatever you call it, connection age. And so I'm with you in that. And I think first and foremost, yes, you've got to understand your buyers. I think what's really compelling to me and what pops into my head when I hear you speak about print and its comeback, I think there's so much noise in the world. I think there's so much stuff that comes at us that it becomes, we get calloused to it. You know, we get numb to it. And you know, you see some of these things that crop up and then they're yesterday's news. And print, in a lot of ways, is new to this generation. And I don't think it's ever going to overwhelm people. Like, there's not going to be a ton of noise in print. There's not going to be this overwhelming nature that says, I'm tired of it. You know, I'm tired of I'm moving from Facebook or Twitter to Snapchat. You know, you've got a lot of this stuff happening. Print can kind of play its role and has a little bit more longevity. Do you feel that at all?
Oh, absolutely.
Take a listen to an excerpt of my conversation with my good friend, Matthew Parker. What are the biggest things in today's world that, you know, salespeople in general are facing? Because I'm sure that you believe that times have changed, and that selling has changed, but I'm sure there's also some things that will never change within the sales. But what do you think are some of the top things that have present new challenges for salespeople?
I think the two key issues are the fact that buyers are no longer as keen to talk as they were, and they have less time. And the second issue is the fact that they're increasingly online as well. So the salesperson who's relied on being face-to-face or voice-to-voice has to move into the online arena much more if they're going to have success in today's world.
Right. I agree with that so much. And you know, sometimes we can see that, and we can certainly understand that that's the case. But you know, it doesn't seem like we all change our ways, right? I mean, you know, I talk about how you know, buyers are going through self-discovery. That's kind of going with what you were saying in terms of them being online, and that they have all these tools to keep people at an arm's length. So it's so much harder for people to get in touch with someone and even start to try to develop a relationship, isn't it?
Absolutely. But at the same time, it may be harder to make contact with an individual by traditional means, but it is so much easier now to actually get your message out to a much larger audience of buyers. So when I started my business over 10 years ago, I had a new opportunity because there was social media out there, there was the power of the internet, and I got to talk to people. So I have clients all over the world, and I wouldn't have dreamt before of having tried to contact them by ringing them up. And now we can connect on social media when there's so many ways to get our knowledge and our message out there that weren't available a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So there are huge opportunities as well as huge challenges. I like to use the example of one of my clients who needed some help with buying. They were in a massive global organization. They were the procurement director, the sort of person that I couldn't even imagine needing me. Mm-hmm. And certainly I wouldn't have spent the time trying to contact them because they probably had about five gatekeepers
And even if I did get through them, why would that person talk to me? And yet they contacted me because they were aware of the message that I've been putting out on social media and on my email lists. And they saw a need for my services and made contact with me. And that could never happen in traditional sales times.
Guys, I would like to take a few minutes this morning to give you a little preaching slash soapbox. Next week, we'll have a really fun guest to talk to. But today, I thought I would take some liberty and give you guys all a shout out and talk to you a little bit about your business and how is it going kind of deal. And I'd probably start off by asking you all a question or posing a question to you so that you can ask it to yourself. And that is, how are you thinking? Where's your mind at? How are things turning in your head these days? And the reason I ask that is that has everything to do with our success. I could sit here and give you the cliche that your attitude determines your altitude and that having a positive mindset is what leads to success. There's no doubt about that on a personal level. There's no doubt that hard work, a little elbow grease is table stakes. It's what we all have to have. Those type of things, those attributes are obviously very much needed. But I'm wondering how you're thinking strategically as an organization, as leaders. How are you contemplating the future? How are you even going into every day? Do you think in terms of what you tactically have to get done each and every day? And are you immersed in the business? I certainly find myself doing that all the time. And, you know, over time, you sit there and go, gosh, you know, am I taking advantage of the opportunities that are in front of me? Because it really is a world full of opportunities. I like to think in terms of textbook strategy. I like to look at the world in a kind of a business plan format. And I think that starts with, believe it or not, purpose, you know, why we exist. And I'm not trying to get too deep in terms of, you know, why we as humans exist. I'm talking about why you and your business exist. What's the purpose? You know, a lot of times organizations, they throw out mission statements and yada, yada, yada. And we can spend inordinate amounts of time writing those up and talking about it. But the reality is that at the core, you have to realize why you exist. And that's probably fairly simple. Your business exists to serve specific clients, hopefully, specific types of clients. You know, that's where it all starts. You know, I remember a long time ago, I had a conversation with a sales manager of mine, and she said to me, you know, I asked her the question. I said, what do you think our purpose is? And she said, without missing a beat, she said, to make money. And I said, well, I think that's where we differ. And that's probably why we're not, you know, humming. We're not, you know, there's not a lot of synergy between us right now, is because I believe the purpose is to serve. The purpose is, you know, we exist to do something for someone. That's first and foremost. Now, the objective, the goal, is certainly to do that in a profitable manner. But I think when we lose sight of that as a industry, an economy, that's when we get ourselves in trouble. When it becomes about the almighty buck first and foremost, when we believe that our purpose, our reason for existing is to make money, it becomes so self-indulgent that we stop bringing value. The purpose for us and the way that we need to get our minds each and every day consistently is to say, you know, why do I exist? Why do I get up in the morning? It's to serve. And I think everything else follows from that. I think the next step is to have some vision, you know, to sit there and say, look, I have a picture in my head of how success looks. I have a picture of what my future aspirations are. You know, certainly without a purpose, we don't know why we're on a journey in the first place. But without a vision, we don't even know where the destination is, right? We know we're here to serve, but at some point, we need to have a picture of what that looks like and how we're going to serve and how we're going to make money and all that kind of stuff. So we can disseminate this from not just our businesses, but we can also do it in our personal lives and our personal businesses to say, look, first, remember why we exist. Second, let's start to craft a picture of, you know, where we want to go. You know, some of the greatest companies on earth have a bigger picture of what they want to do, and they never waver from that. So I think it's certainly interesting to lose ourselves in the tactical of the day-to-day, but we've also got to step back and realize that, hey, you know, we've got to have a bigger picture in mind and keep that in our mind every day so that we take time to think. And I think that's a big thing. We're not taking a lot of time to think anymore. You know, we just do, you know, it's constant emails. It's constant organizational and project management. It's the constancy of our lives. And days pass, you know, weeks pass, years pass. And you realize, God, I haven't stepped aside and thought strategically for a long time. I haven't really thought about what the bigger picture is. Part of that is to be able to have conversations as well. You know, we get immersed in data these days. We get lost in this idea that, you know, we can tell everything that the marketplace wants, or we can determine what everything they want through the use of data and statistical information. I just don't buy into that. And I'll be honest with you. There's a part of me that's intimidated by that. There's a part of me that feels like, yeah, I don't really know all the intricacies of data. I don't have the big budget to invest in these huge data resources. And so on one side of the coin, you know, it could be a bit of a rationalization. But on the flip side, I just don't think that you can run a business, have a purpose, if you will, without real life experience, with anecdotal evidence that you're seeing stuff happen firsthand. You know, you put it all on a data sheet, but until you go out and sit down with someone in their office, see the looks on their face, understand the angst or the challenges amongst them, you know, feel their pain and feel their joy, until you get to that point, I just don't think that you can be really, really great. And so, you know, I think this goes back to this idea of we have to change our thinking. We have to certainly remember what our purpose is, have some vision. And then as we embark on the next level, which is strategy, that's carving the path. And our strategy has to be a mix of, okay, we're going to use the data, we'll use the science, but my gosh, we need to use the art and the beauty of real relationships, real conversation, real observation. And that opens up our minds. You know, when you're looking at just antiseptic data, it becomes pretty binary, and we lose perspective of what's really going on out there. So look, our industry has been built on real relationships. You know, you all are talking to clients all the time. And so I'm not trying to pat you guys on the back and necessarily tell you that what you guys do is the end all be all. I think you have to use a little science too. And I think you need to step back a little bit and think strategically and not get lost in the minutiae of the day-to-day. But there is absolutely, positively no replacement for real-world conversation and real-world observation. We have that. And so changing our thinking is probably easier, in my opinion, from that perspective, than it is with someone who is just simply using data. And so when you think of strategy, you need to start thinking strategy is the path to that vision. It's the path to that end goal. And what am I going to use? Am I going to use a combination of science and real world grassroots type stuff? And am I going to be changing my mind? Meaning, am I going to take the time, you know, in every week and say, let me step back and figure out what's the marketplace doing? What's my observations? I mean, it could be as simple as that, guys. I mean, I don't know how many of you out there keep a diary, but I think one of the things that we as an industry fall short on is chronicling what's going on out there. You know, you as an individual might have clients and you may know it in your head, but why wouldn't we collectively start chronicling this? And you as an organization become better for your clients because, you know, you're all coming in. All the salespeople are coming in with chronicled data. And it doesn't have to be real sophisticated. It could be literally everybody keeps a diary. You know, try it for a couple weeks. Change your mind. Change your thinking. Do some different things that don't have to be huge investments, that don't have to be catastrophic change, right? It could be as simple as I'm going to keep a diary, I'm going to run my business, and I'm going to take 20% of the week, and I'm going to step back, and I'm going to start putting information into buckets and starting to think about the marketplace overall. And maybe, just maybe, I can start to collaborate with a couple of my sales brethren, right? Or maybe even internally with the marketing people or the management and say, why can't we sit down and have this conversation each and every week about what's going on in the marketplace, as opposed to, all right, where are our sales? What are we doing to get more sales? Sales. Why don't we step back and think differently and use our minds a little bit differently? And I'm not saying that you have to do this in a huge way. It could be 10, 20% of your week that you start to do. So I think that's kind of my message today. You know, this is about you and how you're thinking and what you stand for. It's about starting to look at your world and say, look, remember what my purpose is. What's the vision of this company? What's the vision for myself and my business? You know, what's the strategy? What is the recipe? Think of the strategy as your recipe. What's my recipe for getting from point A to point B? And, you know, what are my contingency plans? Because typically it's not a straight line. And am I doing this? Am I taking time out of each week to start to think about, you know, the marketplace and how I'm performing and on that strategy? I don't think I need to talk to you about the next level, which is the tactical piece, which is what you're doing day in and day out, because that's where we're probably lost. I'm just saying, take some time at those other levels, purpose, vision, strategy. Start to think a little bit more in those terms, or at least add that to the mix. And the tactical will not only be more fun, it'll be easier. And you'll start to crave it. You'll start to look forward to those moments with your peers, your organization, where you're collaborating and talking about the dynamics in the marketplace, how the buyers are changing, and re-energizing why you guys exist and why you, what you stand for. And you'll get a feeling for where you're headed and why. And that will lead to great success. So that's kind of my message for the morning. Call it a little morning soapbox by yours truly. But it's something that I think about, and I'm hoping that we all step back and think about how we're thinking. Because I believe that it's those that are thoughtful, those that are contemplating and take that time. Even though in the face of all this activity and all the immediate gratification and the immediacy of every, what seems to be every little issue, pulls us and never allows us to do that. I think the ones that can step out and find some time to do that will have great success. So as you know, I always say, be the buffalo. Well, guys, listen, I can't thank you enough for giving the best of 2018 Brushstrokes podcast a listen. I hope you enjoyed the stroll down memory lane. More importantly, I hope that some of the excerpts we took drove home a few points. You know, once we get past the first of the year, a lot of times we start to stagnate a bit. We plateau. You know, we get all amped up right before the end of the year, and we're going to have a great 2019, and I've got some resolutions, and I got some goals set. We're going to have a nice holiday. Then we come back, and we go a couple weeks into it, and then all of a sudden, some of those habits of plateauing start to take root, and we can't allow that to happen. You know, we've got to treat every day and every week as a new year. And I think that mindset of hope is truly important. So I hope you'll stay with me and we can collaborate, if you will, on this mindset of hope. So I really do hope you enjoy the podcast, and we will be back at you in the next couple of weeks. So a reminder, the podcast was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom content needs. And keep listening, keep tuning in. Thanks so much for listening. Remember, be the Buffalo, and let's go get them in 2019. Take care.